Hello and thank you for listening to Radio Radar Plus. This is episode 22 for Friday, October 2nd. I'm your host, Ludwig Kitzmann. I'm the U.S. Editor-in-Chief here at Games Radar Plus, which is a website.
It is. And if you don't know what a website is...
What's it about? I'm not sure.
I don't know.
It's
Does
actually
anyone
not,
know?
It's not just about games. It's also about Doctor Who and comics and movies and the Avengers. And is Doctor Who an Avenger?
Maybe.
He should be.
He is a superhero.
Yeah. He hangs out. I would imagine that... Wait, Susan, has Doctor Who ever officially met John Steed and Emma Peel? Or is that only a comic book thing?
That's just a comic book thing.
It's just a comic book thing.
Yes.
Well.
Okay. Who are these people talking about? We don't even know who they are because I haven't introduced them yet. I'm joined by Ashley Reed, another editor at Games Radar Plus.
Hello.
We've also got managing editor Sudden.
Yes. So my name... Now, Sudan.
We're keeping that.
Oh, we're totally keeping that. Of course we are. Are you kidding?
This is what happens when we just wing an episode. Managing editor, Susan Arndt.
Yes, but I only answer to Sudan. Or Sudan. That is also fine.
And then, of course, there is the lovable Anthony John Agnello.
Lovable? I'll take it.
You are
quite endearing, it's true.
The lovable rogue.
The lovable rogue, that's even better. Now we're talking.
It's really like the body's coping mechanism. You learn to love him because having any other kind of emotion is just so draining, and he's never going away, so you got to learn to love him.
So it's like a Stockholm Syndrome kind of thing.
One of the first times I met my wife's extended family, one of her cousins looked me up and down in an appraising motion, and then went, "You look like a magician." I wasn't quite sure how to take it, but I'm taking it. I'm taking what you just said, Ludwig. I'm going to put it in my pocket in the same place.
It's like, thank you?
You do look like a magician. Oh, my God.
You really do.
I'm going to cherish that for all time. Anyway.
Like one of those creepy magicians that are somehow involved in a curse.
No.
Oh.
They're in one of those boxes that predict things.
Like the one Las Vegas magician that you really should take seriously, but you don't because of all the other crappy magicians.
He's the magician who is spurned from the magician circle because he's not good enough or like one of his tricks failed and he concocts a way to get revenge by using real magic.
That sounds like a good movie. Anthony, get on that.
I'm on it. I'm calling my guy, my pitch guy right now. I'm going to do it.
So I hear it's been raining, Susan.
Yes.
Yes, we are talking about the weather, but we're going somewhere with it.
Yes, we are going somewhere with this. Yes. So on the east coast of the United States, currently crawling its way up the coast is Hurricane Joaquin. And as a result, basically everybody on the east coast is just getting pelted with rain and wind. Some places, there's flood warnings all over the place. It veers from mildly irritating to actually genuinely dangerous in different places. So that's our weekend.
I keep imagining like this swirling vortex of clouds coming at us, but in the center of it is Joaquin Phoenix's head when he was in the middle of that whole art project thing.
Oh, for sure.
Am I still here with like the beard? And the sunglasses.
Yeah,
it's
just
that head.
Yeah.
In the middle of a bunch of clouds spiraling towards us. And this is the fallout that happens when Joaquin Phoenix's head gets near you.
That's completely accurate. Yeah.
It's accurate, right?
Yeah, totally.
So I
imagine myself sitting here drinking tea, being like, that sounds awful. Wait, I have no tea because there's no water here.
I have a cup of tea right here. It's a nice Earl Grey.
Selfish.
Personal friend of mine. It's raining, and we made up a list of games that you should download, recommendations that you should download to play while it's raining outside and you don't feel like going outside. And I feel like the rain is also tied to the mood that you're looking for in some games.
Yeah, kind of.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I think
absolutely.
So.
What do you think makes a good rainy day game?
So when we first started talking about putting this feature together, it was yet again one of those moments where Susan and I both said a sentence to each other and was just like, yes, that is I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's true, yeah.
And, when I think of a rainy day game, like in RPGs, when you go into an inn and you sleep at the inn to replenish your health, and there's always just a very short, very warm little melody that only plays through once. It doesn't loop. I think every single game you play on a rainy day, or at least a game that I play on a rainy day, has to capture that mood, that feeling, something that is very sort of tranquil and not sort of getting your blood up, unless it is October and you want to horror game it, case, you know, in like weather like this lends itself to that. But, you know, the first game that I wrote about for this little list for the 3DS is a game called Ika-chan. Have you guys ever heard of Ika-chan?
No, tell me what this is.
All right, Ika-chan, I can't recommend it enough. So it is another game by the guy that made Cave Story.
Oh, and okay.
Unlike Cave Story, it's very short, and it's very light, and it's very easy, but it's very similar. You know, it sort of has the exact same sort of exploratory Metroid-y structure. You gain new powers, and you slowly but surely gain access to a larger environment. But instead of being a robot with a gun, you are a baby squid.
And love it.
You wake up.
Kind of squid.
That's super cute.
You wake up at the bottom of the ocean in the deepest, darkest part of the ocean, and it's just go explore. And you like a real squid, sort of like bloop, bloop, like propel yourself around. And there's like a rhythm to sort of propelling yourself through the water. And you find items that let you go further. You know, like one of the very first areas, you'll find that there are rocks above you and you can't get past the rocks until you find a pointy hat. And then the pointy hat gives you that, like the squid fins on the top of your head, and then you can break through. And there is only one song in the entire game, and it's very short and it loops repeatedly, but you will never get sick of it because it is the best. It is so good. And the first time I played it, I remember sitting in my living room, and my wife, Kate, was sitting on the couch nearby. And usually, I'm very used to, if I'm playing a handheld and the volume is on, I get that half hour, 45 minutes before I get the, can you please turn that down or wear headphones? I am sick of your video game bleeps and bloops. And this was one of the only times my wife has ever looked at me and said, can you turn it up?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Because she liked the song so much.
That
so,
is a high bar.
Ika-chan rules, and it's just, it's perfect.
How do you spell that?
It's Ika-chan.
And it's only on...
You can download it on PC if you have it, but I love the 3DS version.
I'm not seeing it on Steam.
I'm not sure if it was ever sold on Steam. Oh. I think it was one of those games that he made once upon a time, and it was just free. And then Nicholas, however you pronounce their name, did a quick port of it for the 3DS. Nicholas announced Ika-chan and then released Ika-chan within a year, which I think is the only time they've ever done that.
I thought for a second you were going to say they announced it and released it the next day, which would be cool.
That was my Nicholas burn. Which is totally unnecessary. They've released things, I swear. But yeah, I totally recommend you guys play it. And if you are...
I'm going to check it out.
Yeah, if you're in the market for a new 3DS, I also recommend getting one of the new cover plate 3DSs, because they are sexy as hell.
Are there any shades of Echo the Dolphin in this game?
Oh!
I.e., should I do my best to avoid it?
No, it is not Echo the Dolphin-y. In fact, it's like almost the opposite of Echo the Dolphin, because you know how everything looks the same in Echo the Dolphin, and you're always kind of messing up because you're moving
too
fast.
And how it's weirdly punitive.
Yeah.
Echo the Dolphin is the game that you always think you love, but you really don't. You should play it again. Susan.
Yes.
Same question, different answer.
What I tend to like in a rainy day game is one that I don't have to think about too much, whether that's because I already know all the systems and I know all the controls, or it's because it's just a very simple, enjoyable thing. That's what I like. That's comforting to me, to just be able to sit down and play without having to learn, like learn a new combat system or learn new lore or learn, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, like sitting and playing Destiny would be really, really fun for me on a rainy day, or going back to The Witcher or something like that, is very, very comforting for me on a rainy day.
How many hours have you put into Witcher now?
Oh God. I think I'm only at like 60 or 70.
Oh my God. Only 60 or 70.
Yeah. No, that's an only. Okay. So I said this in a different podcast, but if you only have the means to purchase one game, buy The Witcher, because it will last you an extremely long time and all of it's good.
Right.
I mean, it's this huge, because, you know, you get a lot of huge games, and we've talked about this before. Lots of open world games have just so much stuff crammed into them, but it's just stuff. Like in Assassin's Creed, you have you know, Rialis to find and shanties and whatever, and in Dragon Age it was the effing shards and all that. And it's just kind of padding. But in The Witcher, it's just all interesting and it all adds something. And it's just enormous and all wonderful. So it's very much a very, very good value for your buck.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Ashley? Rainy day games?
I feel like maybe I'm being a little too practical with this answer, but I think this is kind of how I think of it. I definitely agree. I like to come at a game that's very simple and small and doesn't take a lot of brain power, but also something that is a very small game that's very easy to download quickly, because I've definitely been in those situations where you have a bad internet connection and the web, like a single raindrop hits a single power line somewhere and it's like, oh, no more internet for a week. So something that's I can get very quickly in those intermittent times where the internet actually functions but is still fun and kind of cute and doesn't demand very much from me because I'm trying to have a lazy day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the lazy day aspect is what gets me. I just wanted to play like an adventure game, something that doesn't really test my reflexes or concentration too much, but just sort of wraps me into a story that I can enjoy at my own pace, or just a game that makes me feel sad.
Most of the time when I feel lazy and I'm playing a game, I'm laying down. And once in a while I'll be playing a game where it makes me sit up. If I have to sit up, the game has failed at its rainy dayness. I should be able to just lay there and not move, not have to think. Because the sitting up is, oh, I got to get serious now. Uh-huh. And that should not happen in a rainy day game.
Well, as of using that as our basis, I'm going to say that How Wrong Is Your List will return next week. And if you're following along, if you're listening, please email us at radioradar@gamesradar.com to send us your lists, which will be wrong inevitably, but we still want to see them. I'm going to go for best weather in games. Like, which games do you feel have moments where the weather actually makes a difference? Because I think it's a great way to make a game feel more rich and make an environment feel more alive.
Karate Kid on NES.
Red Dead Redemption has some great storms.
Oh, man, I love the weather in Red Dead Redemption.
It's really good.
I dreamt about a Red Dead Redemption sequel this week. And it wasn't that interesting, but I feel like I'm trying to will a new Red Dead Redemption into existence.
What was the Red Dead game before Redemption?
Red Dead Revolver.
Revolver, that's it.
Made by Capcom and then abandoned by Capcom because they were like, this isn't good. And then purchased almost complete by Rockstar. That was how they got it.
Was that game any good?
I could not finish it. I tried to play Red Dead Revolver for the first time about 3 or 4 years ago, and
if you try to play Red Dead Revolver after Redemption, forget it. Just no.
Yeah, exactly.
At the time it came out, it was good. Wasn't gonna blow your mind. Certainly wasn't the worst thing you were ever going to play.
Yeah.
But then to go from that to Redemption is just, you know, it's like you're crawling and then you're flying.
Yeah. Yeah. It is not. Yeah, man, it's one of those PlayStation 2 games. And I don't know about you guys. I don't know how regularly you still play PlayStation 2 games. But I mine is always hooked up. It's always there. And I still like firing up PlayStation 2 games. And I would say it's really a 50-50 system. You know, because you'll play half of the things that came out on that. Yeah, like the other day, I decided that I just wanted to play the beginning of Final Fantasy XII. And boy, does that still feel good. Everything about it still feels
good. I really hope that that HD update comes to fruition. I'm sure it will. Like, if they updated 10, I'm sure they'll do 12.
Okay. I'm like, hey, are you about to make a wisecrack over there?
No, I like 10.
Good.
I like 10. 10's good.
Yeah, but like, man, when we streamed Oni, Bungie's Oni, a couple of weeks ago, that was the first time I'd ever played it, and whoa.
That is the third-person anime-inspired like hand-to-hand combat plus shooting.
It's so bad.
Thing.
It's so bad. It's so bad.
Oof.
You have to jump with L1. That's never a good.
It's
never
just
a good start.
So, well, you do jump with LB and L1 in Mirror's Edge.
Yes, I know, and that is bad.
It's no, it's great.
No, it's
makes
not.
Complete sense.
No, it's
awesome.
Terrible.
No, it doesn't.
No, it's awful. Because, in and of itself as a design choice, not the worst thing. I mean, it's up there, but it's not the worst thing. But the problem is that the shoulder buttons aren't tuned well enough.
Yes.
To do the kind of precision jumping you need to do in Mirror's Edge.
Yes.
Disagree.
Well, no. You're wrong. So, yeah. Your opinion is
I might give you the Xbox controller, but not the PlayStation controller.
I mean,
okay. That's right. No, I'm referring to the Xbox controller.
Yeah. Okay. No, the bumpers have never been great. Yeah.
I would say I personally think that any game that has a jump command that is not A is a travesty. So probably don't want my opinion.
Like the thing with Mirror's Edge is that you want to be looking around at the same time while you're jumping, and you can't do that if it's on a face button.
Right, right.
That's true.
Anyway, we're off on a way tangent. Even though I totally approve of talking about Mirror's Edge, but we will be talking about it a whole bunch in February when it comes out, when the sequel comes out.
It sounds
I can
so
promise
close.
You that.
So close. That's so
it's
weird.
Almost here. So the other thing that I want to talk about was Uncharted.
Yes.
Uncharted, the Nathan Drake collection. That was my project the previous weekend, is playing all three games back to back. I was reviewing the remastered collection. It's called the Nathan Drake collection.
How it's coming, long it's on, does it take to play all of them?
I would estimate each one is between 7 and maybe 9 hours.
Okay.
Maybe
okay.
9 or 10.
All right.
It's probably a little faster because I knew where to go.
Oh,
and
yeah,
that kind
okay.
of thing. If you're new to it, it'll take you longer.
Sure.
But I would say at least you're gonna get at least 20 hours of gameplay if you are just playing through it once. On normal, and longer if it's your first time, and even longer if you're going to play on the tougher difficulties.
If you play one on easy, you can finish it in about 3.5 hours, which is a blast.
Really?
Yeah.
I know there's a speedrunning mode that they've added to this collection.
Ooh.
And the completion times that you can get that there are trophies for, the third game, which I think is the longest one.
It is.
You could beat that in 4 hours and 15 minutes, according to the trophies.
Now,
oh my God.
I would not normally recommend playing the Uncharted games on easy. But the first one is so clunky by comparison. Now, like when it came out, it was great. But now going back and playing it, it's like, ugh. So,
yeah, like the way that you stick to cover in that game is pretty annoying.
Yeah,
it's terrible. So I would advocate playing on easy just to not hate life.
Yeah.
And it also has some, and bless it, I do enjoy it, but it has some really weird, some really steep downs. Like it has good moments, and then it just has these really awful moments out of nowhere, and it really sours the experience for a couple hours.
I mean, so I find it, I love playing games like in a series, especially or just games from a single developer back to back, and just to sort of get a sense of how they're fixing things or what they prioritize as they go along, or you know what worked for them, what didn't. I find that very fascinating, and I find it very rewarding to see a game series develop that. Like so I really enjoyed playing these games back to back, and I have to say, I'll just come out and say these are the best versions of those games, asterisk unless you played Uncharted for the multiplayer. Because that's no longer present.
Right.
Which is a little disappointing because, I mean, if you're going to preserve something, you should keep it as it was. But I can understand why they don't want to run servers and update everything. And especially in lieu of the, they want people to shift over to the fourth game's multiplayer. Mm-hmm. So there is a beta access included with this package. But still, for $60, I think these are three really, really super solid single player games. Like, and they're still pretty unique. But like you said, Susan, I think playing on easy is especially if you're playing something you've already played before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you just want to experience those beats that you enjoyed, but you don't really want to work as hard.
Yeah.
Because you already did your work in the mine, right? Like you already worked hard.
You
passed the skill test to see the whole game once before. And this is, I felt very liberated when I was playing this because I didn't go after any of the treasures.
That's fair.
Because I was like, I've already done that. I already found all the treasures in like my PlayStation 3 playthrough. I'm like, I'm free. I can just do, I can just enjoy the story and totally ignore these collectibles.
You know, okay.
Because I don't care anymore.
You know, I am a collectible whore. If you put a certain number of somethings in a game, I am compelled to find them. I actually didn't enjoy looking for the treasure in the first Uncharted.
My issue is just that there's no reaction to getting the treasure. Like Nathan is not even remotely excited about finding it. It feels like so detached.
They're not visually interesting. Like the treasures, when you actually find them, they look like things that are props for a photo shoot for Sky Mall magazine. Like, they don't look like there's nothing to really sort of enhance the environment as you go through in the first one. I did like that they got better, the treasures.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you compare that to the most recent Tomb Raider, for instance, you would find a treasure and Lara would be like, oh, what's this? This is awesome.
Yeah. Actually, though, funny enough, I had a roommate who was in college, who was a history major. He was so mad when I was playing that game because Laura would find something. She'd be like, oh, I believe this is from the 16th century, whatever dynasty. And he's like, there's no way she could know that. Run! He'd like storm off. He was so angry. But I'm like, anything. I think it's fun.
In Rise of the Tomb Raider, she has one of the progression systems is her language skill. So the more you read things inscribed on walls and pillars and etched into stone, like if it's ancient Greek, the more you do it, the more she understands. That's kind of neat.
See, I
like
that they made it. I love
that. They integrated into the gameplay, like something that you build in the systems is directly relevant to her growth as a character, right? That's cool.
I like it.
Anyways, I just wanted to go over the games real quick because I think they're worth discussing and it's really cool revisiting them, and I think everyone here has relatively strong opinions on all of them. Uncharted 1 is the worst one.
Yeah.
It's the roughest one.
It is the roughest, yeah.
It is the roughest one. I would not say that it's the worst one.
Well, you're wrong.
Luckily, it comes through with a lot of heart. It introduces all those characters, which are really well written. It's really fun. The pacing, they struggle with the pacing often in that game. And if you're not aware with Uncharted at all, if you don't know about it, it's a third-person shooter that kind of borrows extremely heavily from Indiana Jones in the sense that they want to create sort of shootouts that lead into like a moment of spectacle, which is sort of a cliffhanging moment, like it mm-hmm. leads into tension, like just capturing that structure of movies which builds into tension and the relief of having survived yet another deadly scenario, like Indiana Jones, he gets almost killed every 20 minutes and that's what makes it fun. So they kind of try to recreate that in this game, and they get a lot better as they go along. The problem with the first game is just that it's every encounter, it has the same problem that you had in Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time, where it's like you would reach the point where it felt like the scene was winding down, the shootout was done, and then they would just send in another wave.
Yeah, I had a lot of troubles with that, and I just had a lot of trouble with, they had scenarios where it was just really, really difficult, and then there was no real payoff in mm-hmm. the end. Like, the whole jet ski sequence, which was ridiculous, and the second you got hit with one rocket from one of the dozens of guys who were hanging around the river watching you, you would explode and die. And you get to the end, and they're just like, well, that's over. Now go do this. And it's like, well, duh.
But I was just working on a video on these things today, which is all the moments in Uncharted where you kind of come to a grinding halt because there's something broken or something that doesn't really suit the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And this is especially noticeable in the final boss fights of these games because, number one, we don't need a boss fight.
No.
Right? Like that's like a video game construct that I would say is not fully compatible with what they're trying to do, because at the end you're trying to you should be feeling like the triumphant hero is overcoming. Nathan Drake is like getting his treasure. He's beating the villain. And it's like, yes, it's the end of the movie, right? Like, it's they did it. But then you die repeatedly at the end fighting the boss. And I understand that you want some level of challenge, but that's not reflected in the environment or like a puzzle or anything like that. It's really just a sort of a repetitive fight. And when you die repeatedly, it completely sucks that climax of energy. Then it's just kind of like, I just want to get this over with.
Yeah, Luddy, you and I were talking about it earlier, like what should be in place of those. Like, I have no problem with there being a nemesis for Drake that you actually have a confrontation with, but it shouldn't be like, now shoot blue guy a bunch of times, or, you know, do this specific sequence of punches. And it should be like, here's a cool environment. Here's a cool place where these things are happening. And in order to reach your nemesis or escape your nemesis, you must do these things, you know, in the space to get away from them. And weirdly, the series does that other times, just not so well at the end of the game.
And not to make the really obvious comparison, but I actually think Tomb Raider, the last Tomb Raider, got a little bit closer. It wasn't perfect, but its last sequence, a lot of it was going through this tower as it's collapsing around you. And then you had to shoot a couple guys, but it was never really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the very end, she gets the guns. And it takes like 2 seconds to kill the bad guy, but it's just so, it's so awesome that you're just shooting him off the tower with the guns. I'm like, yes! So it wasn't even really, it wasn't a boss fight but it was so satisfying.
There are other ways to write in the satisfaction that you're looking for at the end with that aren't just, I beat this really tough challenge at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very interested to replay the first Uncharted, because when I played it when it came out, I did not have an HDTV.
Ooh.
Yes.
Wow.
Which,
wow.
Yeah. Which makes playing that game a lot harder.
Yes. Yes, I would
Does
say
it?
So.
Yeah.
How, in what way?
You can't
I do
see
not
anything.
Know this.
It's the detail in the environment.
Yeah.
You can't see a goddamn thing.
Yep.
Oh, no.
Yep. You cannot see anything. So I'm looking, and I will play it on easy because, as Luddy said, I already earned my trip down memory lane because I finished it the hard way. And I do want to re-experience, like, finding that plane. Not the plane.
The sub.
Yeah, finding the sub was still one of the greatest moments in a video game. Because
so cool.
Totally didn't see it coming. Completely fits the story.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little unhappy about the Nazi zombies, but whatever. I'll let that go. They were young. It's okay, you know. we all make creative mistakes.
Well, I think technically they're Spanish zombies.
They're Nazis. They are
there are Nazis, but there are more Spanish zombies.
Really?
Yeah, it's a combination.
Zombies?
This
is fresh in my memory.
And sort of proto-Aztec zombies as well. Like,
okay, I'm just upset about the zombies.
Yeah,
that's fair. Yeah, it's fair. Regardless of their nationality,
or
we can
political
be upset
leanings.
By them.
I wish there weren't zombies, but
see.
But I'm looking forward to doing all of that.
And you know, it's really surprising how good that game looks. Like, so Blue Point Games, they've done the Shadow of the Colossus update for PS3. They did Metal Gear Solid HD Collection. Their very first one was the God of War 1 and 2 HD compilation. They did fantastic work on these three games. By the time you get to the third game, it's starting to look... I think Lucas Sullivan over here was looking at me playing Uncharted 3 for some capture footage, and he said it looked better than Mad Max.
Oh, yeah. Just watch from watching you play. Infinitely better.
Right. I mean, this is like, so by the time you get to 3-3, which is very sophisticated lighting and just amazing texture work and just looks fantastic on the PS3, they did such a great job that it's very, very close to looking like a brand new PS4 game. 2, not so much, but 2 also looks fantastic. 1, clearly not in the same league, but it still looks really, really nice now. Like, they added some extra lighting effects. They updated the character model so that they're more consistent between games. They made the feel of aiming more consistent between all the games. And just the way that everything is laid out, this menu that connects you to each of the game, and you have one options menu that controls the options for every game. But you can make, you know, adjustments per game if you want to. There are new difficulty modes. There's one called Explorer, which is super duper easy, where you can just like one shot everyone and just you can absorb a million bullets. Like if it's like, I just want to see the story.
Right.
I just want to see things fall apart. I want to see the collapsing bridges, the car chases. That's
it. The plane crash.
Exactly. So all of that stuff is really, really cool. I'm really satisfied with it. But 2 is still the best game. By far.
I love the beginning of 2. I love those people. I like when they find him and like, what? He's sitting at a bar, but there's no bartender. And I want to know where he is and what they're doing.
Well, here's the train. You start with the train.
I think it's completely undeniable that 2 is the best game of the trilogy. It's not my favorite, though.
Okay. I think it has the best pacing.
It has the best pacing. Like, it has the best
gameplay.
And it
has the best feel of journey. Like, you go from, like, you land in Nepal and you're in the city and then you get on the train and then you end up, you know, in the mountains and... That sense of progression, that's what makes it so hard to put down.
Yep, absolutely true. Although, can we all just right now acknowledge how shitty the stealth part is?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. It's terrible.
I'm okay with it.
It's awful.
I don't think it's awful.
Any game that really doesn't put what it needs to into stealth, it always turns out bad.
I don't know. I don't mind it because I feel like it's very quick and you just need to see, oh, that guy has his back turned. He's the first one I should do. Like, they kind of lay it out like
Except
a puzzle to some degree.
It takes forever to figure all that out and then actually do it. And it's one of those points that brings the game to a halt. And it feels extremely out of place with the rest of the gameplay because you never do anything like that ever again.
You can do it a couple of times. There are a couple of scenes where you can choose to approach it stealthily and not start a fight immediately.
But why would you?
Cause it's fun. I like the stealth ish. Anyway. That's also the first game where they really embrace the fact that Nathan Drake climbs a whole bunch.
Yeah.
He climbs everything. So that you can climb around things and you can go around and, you know, there's so much more verticality going on in 2 that there is not in 1. And 1 would have benefited a lot more. Because there are a couple of, like, closed room shootouts in 1 that are just really tough and really bad because you don't really have any options. You kind of hope that he takes cover on the right thing.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm thinking of one right now. Remembering it right this second.
Yeah, one feels very much more like we are going to imitate third-person shooter games and marry that with this Indiana Jones character. Very, very, it's more traditional and it doesn't always really work. In 2... they kind of realized that Drake would be in these enormous open spaces. And like the one temple that you go into, which is just so freaking huge, is that for me is what encapsulates Uncharted.
And if you follow games and in terms of technology, if that kind of thing interests you at all, I think Uncharted 2 was also a landmark achievement in terms of what they could do in real time. Like, there are a lot of moments where there's essentially an entire level on a moving object. You know, so like the train is one example. The fact that the train works as well as it does as a level is really fantastic. I mean, there have obviously been train levels. I mean, even back to, like, if you think about Ratchet and Clank 1 on PS2, that has a train level, but it's not nearly the same.
No.
Like, it doesn't have the same kind of feeling, the same looks. And there's a better example in earlier in the game where you're in that, I think you're in a hotel. And the helicopter starts firing missiles into the floor, and the floor starts buckling, and everything starts sliding around. And all the things that are sliding around, you can still use as cover. You can still attach yourself to them. And there's a gunfight happening while the lights are shaking, the walls are crumbling, this whole place is falling apart, and then it tilts, and everything starts sliding out the window, including if there are enemies left that you haven't taken out yet. And you have to jump right at the end. And that, like, is such an amazing technical accomplishment. But it's not just to make you go, ooh, wow, that's pretty. Because you were playing through that whole scene and you were able to read what was happening. And that made it feel like a movie. And that's exactly what they're trying to go for.
I actually really like the plane as well when it's like... And it doesn't feel like it's moving until... I can't remember what causes it, but the front of the plane just, like, opens up and things start flying out. And you're like, oh, well, that's convenient. And then you start getting pulled to where you're like, wait, no, no. And then he actually goes flying out. You're like, oh, shit, was that supposed to happen?
Uncharted 3 has, like, some really good moments. Sometimes my issue with that was sometimes they feel like they don't really connect in a good way, but
that's true.
I have to say I liked it a lot more now that I played it again. I liked the story a lot more. I think it had the fewest like moments where I got stuck and frustrated, I would say.
That's good.
And I think, Susan, this is your favorite. Uncharted 3 Drake's Deception is your favorite.
It is, yes. Of the trilogy, it is my favorite.
Is it?
It is. I fully recognize it's... Two has the best gameplay. It has the best pacing. It has the most wonderful individual moments. I fully, fully, fully recognize all of that. Three has the incredibly ridiculous wandering in the desert and then immediately getting into a huge boss fight, which is like, okay, you're not dehydrated or even a little tired. Okay, that's fine. That's whatever. It's cool. You don't need a nap? All right, that's fine. And then, you know, indestructible enemies and all of that, which is a whole bunch of BS, which is terrible. But.
Sorry.
I was waiting for a butt in there. Yeah. I'm like, okay.
But here's what I really love about it. So when you normally have a character like Drake, he's there to be a very popcorn hero, right? He's off. He's having adventures and he's doing funny quips and he's got the half tuck going on. He's very handsome. But in three, you actually get to see him more as a person because you see his relationship. You see how he was abandoned as a kid. You know, he didn't have a father. And then Sully took him in. But now Sully is getting older and saying, hey, I'm not always going to be here. And so he's dealing with the mortality of his parent, basically, which is a very, very defining moment in a grown-up's life. When you go, holy shit, you mean my parents are going to die at some point? Because, like, you always know it in the back of your mind. But there's a point in your adult life when that becomes a reality. And it's terrifying. It rocks your entire world. So he's grappling with that. And he's also grappling with the fact that his marriage failed because he was a lousy husband. Yeah. And that is a very real thing. So we've got the very fun popcorn Drake going on, and he's having adventures and he's doing his quips and he's, you know, running out of a burning chateau and all of that, and that's all super, super fun. But then we also have these snapshots of his life in between all the treasure hunting, and it's him as an actual person. And I love that. It's not the kind of thing that you can put into every game. It's not the kind of character development that makes sense in every game, but I think it's woven into the narrative really, really well, and it adds a depth that you would not normally get from this kind of game.
I think that I need to get the Nathan Drake collection just to replay Uncharted 3, because, you know, Susan, everything you're saying is so true about the story. You know, I know at the time people talked about it a lot, but I feel like it's a moment that has sort of faded in discussions around this series. That scene near the back, you know, third of the game when he lays his head down in Elena's lap is one of the most human things that has ever happened in any video game.
Yes.
Like, it is just so beautiful and so well done and so emotionally fraught, but I feel like nothing I played in Uncharted 3, like when I was doing things, made me feel connected to that moment. It was like not like The Last of Us, where at every single moment,
sure, yeah,
I felt like the things that Naughty Dog was showing me when I wasn't in control, I still felt like this deep connection between the activities and the drama. And, you know, like, the thing is I wonder if my bad impression of Uncharted 3 comes from the fact that I was playing it on launch week before they patched in and refined, like, you know,
the aiming,
because it was broken. It played like same, garbage.
I was in exactly the same place, Anthony, and I went into this game in the Nathan Drake collection with the same feelings, thinking that I think Uncharted 3 is the worst one.
Yeah.
In fact, I think it's worse than the Vita one, Golden Abyss, which is decent. And I'm changing my mind. I think it's great.
All right, I gotta replay it then. I gotta replay it. And this is another thing. I know that I don't think Naughty Dog ever explicitly said this was the case, but the other thing that was always in my head playing Uncharted 3 was there were all those rumors that the whole campaign was going to be co-op. and there wasn't just going to be the own online co-op mode that they put into 3. And it always felt like there was somebody else there, like an AI partner that was like gumming things up, especially at the first half of Uncharted.
Yeah, it is the first time where you have as many as 3 other characters with you.
Yeah. And that,
but the environments are also about 3 times bigger.
The environments are 3 times bigger. Yeah, I think I need to replay it.
It goes to some. It's more globetrotting than the second game, which is one of the things I think makes it seem worse than the second game, because it feels a little disconnected. Like, we're like, let's go here. Let's go to Syria
now.
Yeah. But there are really cool moments in those sequences. And I think overall, the way that game is directed, like in the sense that Naughty Dog lays out the level and the items in the level and what happens in the level and where the enemies come in, that kind of stuff, that gently lets you know what you should do in response for the scene to play out the way it's meant to, essentially. For you as the stuntman, as Nathan Drake in the scene that's being filmed, they got a lot better at that. And in fact, I think there's a scene pretty early on in the game where Sully and Drake go to a French chateau.
Yeah.
And there's a little bit of puzzle solving, and it's very quiet, and they're just talking, and you're learning a little bit at them, and like you're going underground, and you're discovering this tomb. That stuff is really good, but then they have the escape, and the enemies show up, and they start torching the mansion, and the mansion is on fire. And you have all these moments during that escape sequence, which I think are so perfectly representative of what they're trying to do with Uncharted. Like, you're shooting, so you take out the enemies. Now you're crossing a beam with Sully, and there's like some witty commentary, and the floor collapses, and you're in this room, and you're stuck, and it looks like you're about to burn to death. And then someone fires a shot through like a collapsing wall on the left to you, and now you know, oh wait, I can go through there because someone just fired a shot through that. So then you just do some shooting, you do some exploration. There's another escape. There's a running sequence. Like, the way it moves from one thing to the other through all of the main pillars that are supporting the game, it's great. It's brilliant. I think it's the best sequence in any Uncharted game.
It also, unlike the boss fight that you were talking about earlier, it creates a sense of urgency and tension without setting you up to fail over and over and over again. Like, the entire time you're getting out of that chateau, you feel like you're in danger every single second. But the game is giving you a lot of leeway to figure, figure out all the stuff that you need to figure out, to take out the enemies you need to take out, to actually get across the beam. It's nearly impossible, unless you get shot, it's nearly impossible to fail that sequence, but you always feel like you're just a whisker's breadth away from.
And the camera work is so good at showing you where to go. And the other thing that I like about it is just, not only is it sort of visually very impressive, and not only is it exciting and to it just to escape from this whole scenario. One of my favorite moments is when the ceiling is burning and it breaks through, and there's a bathtub from a bathroom above falling down. It lands upside down. And you just know that's cover. Yep. Like, I need to go take cover in front of this bathtub. You know, and they wrote the scene. There's a point where your foot gets stuck in a floorboard, and Sully turns around to come and help you out of it, and someone comes up behind him, and you just know, I got to shoot that guy because he's going to get Sully. Mm-hmm. And that's video game writing. Like, they're writing little scenes that you have to react to. And it's way better than a QuickTime event. That's Uncharted in a nutshell. One of the things that I didn't end up mentioning in my review, because it's kind of like a whole separate argument, is I don't think this is like the ultimate video game. I don't think this is the best way to tell a story in a video game necessarily. The ceiling seems a little lower to me in terms of expression and how they're doing this and stuff like The Last of Us, in terms of very cutscene heavy, character heavy, writing heavy. But they are very close to that ceiling, and they are closer than any other developer. Which is in some ways a good thing. It's just as good in some ways. Like, I'm so happy that these games are getting the sort of visual facelift that they did, so that you can play them again.
This is making me really want to replay all of them this weekend, which I probably should not attempt
is great.
To do.
And the soundtrack,
is
great. On top of all that,
amazing.
Yeah,
so good. Just the theme song is just like that. Oh man,
that is an adventure in musical form. Right? Yeah. Like, you listen to that and you feel like you are going on the little red dotted line across the map, and then you hit the dot when you hit a port of call, and then you're now the next part of the leg of the adventure and the next little red dotted line. It's so awesome.
Yeah, and is there a whole lot better acting in video games? I mean, you can't. It's difficult to find better acting
than in the Uncharted
games?
Than
what's happening in the Uncharted series.
sounds like somebody sounds like somebody hasn't played Metroid Other M.
Oh, stop it.
Oh, boy. The baby's crying.
Oh, my God.
Sorry. Did you guys all, you know, have we covered the moments that you wrote up in our favorite moments from Uncharted feature?
We hit mine.
We've covered.
Yeah.
Yeah, we hit a couple of them. We've hit a couple of them so far. For those listening, I believe that feature will be going up Monday. You are hearing this Friday, unless you are far in the future, in which case I hope we have flying cars. But yes, we covered the vast majority of it. Or not
no,
even the vast
no,
majority,
no, no.
but
we
covered enough.
We hit a few.
One of my favorite moments.
In my soul, I was thinking of my favorite moment.
One of my favorites is in 3, where you get to this locked gate, and Drake is with Chloe and Charlie. And they are trying to get to the other side of the gate, and you start climbing because it looked like there's a ledge that you can climb. So you start, right? So you're going to go around it because it's locked. By the way, Uncharted 3 is a lot less obvious in showing you where to climb up and stuff. It's not as painfully obvious as in 2, which is also another good thing.
No, that's good.
But you start climbing, and Charlie's like, we'll just use a little bit of muscle. And he kicks down the gate while you're still up on the building climbing. And Drake's like, oh, okay.
We could also do that, I suppose.
Yeah, we could just kick the gate. Okay.
If you want to be a behemoth about it.
That was...
I'm trying to pull up these moments.
The moment that I wrote up, and you sort of touched on it, Luddy, is there's a moment when Charlie and Cutter and... Oh, God, you just said her name.
Chloe.
Charlie is Cutter.
Yeah. I just like saying Cutter. So Charlie, Cutter, and Chloe are with Nate and Sully, and they're like, and there are two places we need to go, Syria and a French chateau. And Chloe's like, and Nathan's like, you two are going to Syria. And she's just like, ah,
Nate, you bastard.
I love that entire sequence.
We've got playing Marco Polo on top of Hotel Shangri-La.
A lot of moments between Chloe and Nate are pretty fun.
I really like Chloe.
Oh, well, she's amazing. And she's fantastic.
So yeah,
she is. And this wasn't my pick for best moment, but I think my second favorite moment might be in Uncharted 2, where Nate finds Elena, and then Chloe finds Elena, and she's like, I see what's going on. It was just too funny. It's too cute.
The collapsing building, you've got that down,
yep,
Susan.
Yep, that's my favorite moment out of the entire trilogy.
Ashley, you suggested Elena and Drake floating over Spanish Gold.
I did. There's that sequence right after the jet ski where I guess this is the reward for the jet ski, where they're going over the Spanish manifests, and Elena oh so subtly looks at the ring on Drake's neck and is like, is that from somebody special? And she like grabs it and starts getting like really close to him. But the entire time they're still talking about Drake and his gold. And it's just, I'm like, you two are nerds, and it's adorable.
The other cool thing about Uncharted 1 is that I'd forgotten was there's a point where Drake wants to bail out. He's like, I'm done. This is too dangerous. We have to go. We're going to get to the boat. Mm-hmm. And Elena's the one who is egging him on and trying to trick him into, you know, keeping his pursuit of this treasure.
That scene was actually part of that, too, because she's like, oh, I bet someone clever could find the gold. He's like, yeah. I see what you're up to.
And that's like that's an unusual. Like, it's not often that the someone who you would consider the sidekick, right, to be taking charge.
It's
and
true.
She does. She's like, well, we're going to get it. We're going to go get that treasure. Stop trying to chicken out.
It is interesting, too, how...
And I think he tries to quit in 2 as well, and then it's someone else talking him into it. I think it's Schaefer who talks him into not bailing out on the quest.
One thing I can't remember if they did this with Uncharted 3, but I think it's interesting how, at least in 1 and 2, I remember for sure, Nate is like, oh my god, I gotta protect Elena, and Elena's like, you really don't, but over the course of the games, it gets a little more... It's not just, oh, I'm making sure the cute girl doesn't die. It's like, I'm making sure this person who I love very, very much doesn't get hurt. And I can't remember if that happens in 3 or not. Can anyone clear that up for me?
Gosh, I don't remember.
Well, in
it all blurs together. I'm not sure which one.
But I guess their relationship
in
just
3
gets...
about how the way he chooses to live his life puts his loved ones in danger.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it really starts to sink in to him. But one of the things I wanted to mention was that just that the Uncharted trilogy on the whole really treats women like equals. I mean,
yeah.
Which I appreciate.
Drake is obviously the star, of course. But Chloe and Elena are just as talented, just as skilled, just as smart as he is. They're not treated like, you know, the little damsel or the little sidekick or the, you know, the token. It's just, you know, they're all totally, you know, able characters in their own right. And then, you know, the villain, can I talk about the villain in three? Yeah. It's not a spoiler.
Yeah.
It not only is a woman, but it's.
I wish she had a little bit more to do.
I do too, because she's so cool.
There's a scene where they're having a James Bond-ish conversation at a table. Yeah. It's amazing. So good.
Man, so I'm embarrassed because I was going to be like, and even What's-Her-Name in Golden Abyss was a pretty good character. But I don't think it's the character's fault for not having.
No, that game is.
Marissa. Meryl? She had Meryl hair.
She had Meryl hair, but that game is...
Well, I liked her too. She was cool.
She was cool. She was
the, I just remember her name.
Yeah, she was the coolest part of the game in terms of character, because even Nate was half-masked. That was like Nate like had a cold and was filled with NyQuil. And that
it's,
was, that
you're
was...
not wrong. Golden Abyss was, in case you guys don't remember, that was a Vita launch title. And it was very, very clearly, hey, flagship brand, we have this new piece of hardware coming out, so you got to make a game for it. And Naughty Dog going,
Nope, we're busy with our mushroom zombies.
Okay. You know. It's
and
not.
They call, well, they called in, they called
Sony
in,
Bend.
So, yeah, Sony Bend.
Oh, no!
And it was like half the staff. It was the staff that they kept from Sony Liverpool, right? When they shut down Liverpool and brought them into Bend. And it was like people that had worked on Wipeout trying to make Uncharted.
Yeah, bless them. They tried, and they did a fair job.
It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just has moments of where the gimmicks of the Vita make no sense. Like there's a point where you're trying to escape. I think it's a burning building. You're trying to escape a burning building, and they have this mechanic where you have a machete, and when you're in the jungle, for instance, you cut through things by slashing across the screen with your finger.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a piece of cloth hanging in front of Drake, who's trying to escape the house, and it's like you have to use your machete to cut through this cloth. He can't just walk through the fabric.
I know. And then like.
What happened? Is like someone not? Is there too much starch in it or
and
something?
And the worst. This is back when they were trying to make that rear touchpad still happen.
Yeah.
So there were parts of the game where you would have to manipulate the back touchpad for him to climb and stuff. It never worked properly. Never.
Some of the gimmicks were nice though. I liked when you had your journal and you needed to like do a rubbing. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade style.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I kind of like that. I kind of liked the whole mechanic of putting Nate's journal together.
Yeah,
because
no, I agree.
Usually it's just there. Usually you just have it and
Uncharted 3 also has the best puzzles, by
it
the
does.
Way.
I should clarify earlier when I said no very loudly and hearing that it was a Sony Bend product. It's not that I was upset that Sony Bend was involved. That's actually my hometown, so I was a little upset that they made a subpar game. But I guess if it's okay, hooray! Represent!
It really does suffer from having to shoehorn all the Vita-isms into it. But it's not bad. Like, it's not shameful.
That's good. Yay! You're doing all right! People I probably know from high school.
It also connected to Uncharted, what was it called? Fight for Fortune?
Oh, the card
game. Like the card
game? The card game, which was good. It was actually good. So you would find stuff in Golden Abyss, and that would power up some of your cards in the card game, which was super. Like, the card game was really good by itself. But if you played it with Golden Abyss, it actually made your cards more powerful, which was really nifty.
So really, Golden Abyss was like the in-app game for the card game, not the other way around?
Yeah. Admittedly, I am a sucker for card games, so I may be a little biased. But it's still, it's a surprisingly solid game.
Okay.
So that seems like we're all on chart. Let me tell you, I think Nathan Drake is having a much better week than Tony Hawk.
Oh, bless. Ooh.
Could anyone not?
Have you played the new one, Anthony?
Pardon?
Have you played the new Tony Hawk?
No. I have been enjoying the screenshots thoroughly. And I'm very disappointed, actually. I have been trying to get the professional skateboarder, Alexis Seblon, who is the current reigning champion of the X Games, and she lives here in New York City, and has been sponsored by some Tony Hawk brand thing. She's not associated with the game in any way. But I wanted her to come on a stream with us to play the game anyway before we all knew it was a disaster. And now I want her to come on even more. I want to put a skateboarder in front of this game and just see how that goes.
I think that would be amazing.
I don't understand why Activision would say, well, let's just get it out there.
I will tell you exactly why. I will answer that question for you.
I want to know.
Because the rights were going to expire.
Is that it?
Yeah, they had to put out a Tony Hawk game. Now, why they didn't just, I don't know, do a Tony Hawk card battling game, for example.
Or
give it to any other developer. Any other developer at all.
Yeah.
Instead of putting out this immensely buggy mess that tarnishes the brand. Like, they have now lowered the value of their own brand by putting out this thing that's broken.
And, like, we are, and I don't think I've ever seen, with the exception of Sonic, and that one's debatable, seen a venerated game series tarnished repeatedly and more severely with each outing for so long a period of time. Because we've gone from, it was either 2007 or 2008, and it was the Tony Hawk where, like, Bam Margera from Jackass was, like, teaching you how to be the king of the skaters. I think that was Tony Hawk's underground. And it was like, yeah, man, you gotta be a tough punk. Be like, Bam Margera, you're a 40-year-old man dressed like a 13-year-old.
Also, your name is Bam.
Was he using a shopping cart as your skateboard, as your teaching aid?
Yeah. So that was 2007 or 2008, and then the next one was Tony Hawk's Ride, which, like, what are you doing? Why would anybody say in R&D, yeah, that's a thing that a human being will want to stand on and won't hurt themselves with? This is the one with the like, fake peripheral skateboard.
Yeah.
And then it disappeared. That effectively murdered their entire, you know, franchise. And then they finally come back with the HD remake of the original Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, and it's terrible.
Oh, wait, now, why was that terrible?
Oh, it was apparently really shoddy. Like, the control wasn't great. All of the licensed soundtrack was gone.
Oh, well, that's, yeah.
Yeah, so that was a bummer. And then this. And it's just like, we're coming up on a nearly a decade of just ridiculous, bizarre choices with this series.
Well, here's your core problem, right? You have something, everybody knows who Tony Hawk is. It's an immediately recognizable name, and therefore it is a very valuable brand. However, skateboarding has been and gone. Like, yes, obviously there's still a very vibrant skateboarding community, yes. But as a larger, I don't want to say fad because that's kind of diminishing.
The marketable
subculture that people suddenly started selling.
Yes.
At the end of the 90s, like after extreme sports became acceptable, and like the skateboarding is not a crime T-shirt craze when there was money in that.
Yeah.
That's gone.
That's long gone. Like, you couldn't release a BMX game right now either for similar reasons. I don't...
Or a snowboarding game.
Except for SSX.
Except for SSX.
I mean, you could release it.
You could.
But would you?
This is a...
Well, I mean, maybe that's... Maybe this is how Activision is coping with that difficulty of the scene essentially changing. Because they're clearly not giving the developer enough time or money.
Mm-hmm. Like, I just, I don't know.
We can clue that from all of their licensed stuff. You can see it in even, like, The Legend of Korra with Platinum.
Ooh.
You know, that was clearly a Rush job. I mean, they did a good job anyway-ish with what they were given. But it's not drawing the same kind of push that a Destiny or a Call of Duty gets.
I just don't understand because, like, you are filthy with money, Activision. Like, you are, like, redolent with spices and cash. This is what you are. And your pillars make so much money. And I understand that you want to keep fueling those engines. You want to keep fueling Destiny and Call of Duty and, you know, your foreign brands. You want to keep World of Warcraft running in China. You want to keep Call of Duty Online going in China. You have your money makers. But then it's literally like they say, we have all this cash. Now let's invest it in something else. Oh, we have all this Skylanders money. Let's invest it in something else. Let's make a Legend of Korra game. We still have Legend of Korra. We have Transformers. We have Tony Hawk. We have these incredibly lucrative licenses. And then they make a game for $15 in 3 months. And
yeah.
I what are you doing?
And charge, like, $60 for it.
And charge $60 for it. And, yeah, like, and you wonder why, like, because they penalize these studios for not turning in, you know, some kind of gangbuster profit maker. And it's infuriating. You know, they have these incredibly talented smaller studios under their thumb. High Moon Studios, who've made the Transformers games forever, and there's the guys that are forced to slave on the Spider-Man games, Anachronox or something.
Oh, God, yeah.
And
Beenox.
Beenox, thank you.
Anachronox is the really
That's
good
the game with the role-playing game.
yes, it is. Beenox, like, they're very talented studios, but they're treated like garbage. And it's like, here is like $10, and
okay,
let's have a game done in 6 weeks.
They're artistically treated like garbage. We do not
know
how they are treated as employees.
Oh no, yeah. I mean, well, they're employed, and the studios remain open.
Right.
But like, they're given crap artistic opportunities.
Very short runways.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And why? When you could make a licensed product. That and like not for that.
People are making amazing licensed products.
Right.
Alien Isolation, Shadow of Mordor.
Yeah,
there you go.
I'm not saying that they need to invest the kind of cash in a Tony Hawk or a Legend of Korra game that Warner Brothers is pouring into Batman and Mad Max and Lord of the Rings, because those are Warner Brothers things. And Activision doesn't need its licenses to be their tent poles. But I mean, guys, spend a little bit more.
Here's my question.
I mean, keep your reputation in place, right?
If you okay, so you need to put out a Tony Hawk game to keep the brand. Fine. Why would you not go for a downloadable title that's a lot smaller, right? It's just forget like career mode and super, you know, don't get anybody's likeness in there, so you don't have to pay to be a famous skater. You're just whoever you want to be. And
Phony Hawk.
Yeah, like, just yeah, you him. Just need Tony Hawk. Mm-hmm. Tony Hawk, and then make your own avatar. Done. And it's just doing tricks and stuff. And then you can sell park packs afterwards.
Yeah.
Like,
there you go.
Here's $2. Here's 4 more skate parks.
Done. I don't know. I don't get it. I'm like,
they don't seem to go small. Activision does not go small on anything, which seems like maybe not the best idea.
Yeah, I'm. Well, Ludwig, you've played Transformers Devastation, right?
Yes.
Have you played since you played it at Comic Con? Have you played it since then?
No, I have not.
No. And you liked what you played at Comic Con.
Yeah, I liked it. It was kind of just like Legend of Korra.
Like
it's like,
Legend
this
Korra,
seems
yeah.
fine. I will enjoy the action gaming in this. I don't particularly care about the rest of it, but it seems fine.
All right. Yeah.
I think the difference between Platinum Games and a lot of other developers that are put in the same position as someone like Robomoto is, Platinum starts with, what does our game feel like?
Yeah.
Let's get that right. So, I mean, the Legend of Korra, everything else about the game wasn't that great. Like, the structure was kind of iffy and the writing wasn't that great. But the fighting was fine.
Yeah.
Because it felt good.
The action.
And that's where they start. And I feel like they did exactly the same thing with Transformers Devastation. Fighting feels good. Let's go from there.
Transformers already succeeds in exactly the area that Legend of Korra failed miserably. I feel like people reacted very poorly to Legend of Korra, not because that was a bad game necessarily, but because it was devoid of the characters that make that yeah. series vital. Like, the whole point of that series is the characters and the way they interact with each other. And Transformers already has more characters. You know, you've got, you got a yellow car, who turns into a delightful little man, and you've got a big red truck that turns into Robot Jesus, and you got all the things. You it's already doing one better than Legend of Korra. But at the same time, I do worry about it. I worry about it because Platinum is a remarkable developer, but if you give them the same sort of setup that the poor people making Tony Hawk 5 got, That's not a recipe for success.
Yeah. And we've talked about it before. They seem way too busy.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're the Japanese Telltale.
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. Well, hell, what does Platinum have in the hopper right now? They're doing Scalebound, Star Fox, and
Star Fox was delayed recently.
Star Fox was delayed. Star Fox was delayed. And thank God, because man,
it was not too great.
Yes, Star Fox, Transformers, Scalebound, which is the big one. And Scalebound looks like the one that they're working on for a couple of years.
Near 2. That's right.
Near 2.
The
yeah.
most unlikely game in reality. I just refuse to believe it's real. I feel like I'm.
Well, currently it's not. Right. But soon, possibly.
It's more real than the Final Fantasy VII remake.
Hey-o! What? Well, no, that's not true. At least there's a trailer for the Final Fantasy remake. I don't think
there's a trailer for the Nier.
They've gone from
saying...
It was
called the whole press conference.
It's slightly... The 7 remake is slightly more real than it was. They went from, we will not make this game, to, we're probably going to make this game.
Oh, man.
I think that about does it for this show. Remember, next week we're going to do How Wrong Is Your List based on meteorological phenomenon in games, your favorite weather in games.
You and your $5 words.
Right. That's it. We've successfully deconstructed Nathan Drake's career and Tony Hawk's career, so I feel like that's a pretty good show.
One much better than
the story of Nathan Drake and the story of Tony Hawk.
One comedy, one tragedy.
Nicely done.